Well, I thought I'd recap a little bit, just very brief summary, so people who weren't here yesterday get an idea, and those of us who were here yesterday, and things have moved on, so to get back again. Yeah. And there's something about the nature of mind. We have awareness or citta, which is a basic ability to be conscious at any particular moment. So it's a moment by moment experience. So consciousness is just the stuff coming into the senses, and then the mental consciousness, and that of course doesn't cover everything that's coming in through the senses all the time. It selects, you know, and it selects also in terms of what particular pieces of mental consciousness arise, whether it's a memory or an aim or an anticipation or emotion or a thought. So that selection, you know, is citta. It means it's actually a kind of a location or domain, an area that we're with at any particular moment. Yeah? So at any particular moment, you're not remembering your name, you're not remembering your mobile phone number. That's not there right now. But you could do. You could shift to that. Yeah? So that's somewhere in consciousness, but it's not in your awareness right now. You know your name, it's in consciousness, but it's not in awareness. Yeah? It's not kind of coming up. So that can change, so then we can be conscious of our names, our addresses and so forth. So then that becomes in awareness. So awareness is just the location of what's up and running for you at any particular moment. And that can be quite chaotic in that memories come back suddenly, it can be quite random, but essentially what comes into your awareness is results, karma, results of actions, results of what's been happening, the strongest things you've been affected by, some of them even in the past can come up, so there's a certain sense of that which is most hot for you or most meaningful for you arises in your awareness. Some it's pleasant, some it's unpleasant, the thing that really means something for you. You probably don't remember blowing your nose in 1982. Unless it was a particularly rich experience. And if it happened, didn't it? So this is what we call awareness. It's bound, and so that's so that citta is bounded. It's limited, and it has to be. And so when we're not trying to really be with everything that's ever happened to us, but at least to be with the most meaningful things, so that we can, learn at our karma, learn about our joys, our happiness, our fears, our worries, so we can learn from life. But some of this stuff is rather difficult, or we even lose contact with it. We get overwhelmed by other things, we're not really with our meaningful things. There's all sorts of bric-a-brac just tumbling in, train times and what are going to do tomorrow and whose birthday it is and so forth. All sorts of stuff comes tumbling. So we're not actually dealing with the most meaningful pieces, just dealing with the stuff that's come tumbling in. So there's a sense in which when we meditate, we sort of create an artificial boundary. So we'll put that stuff aside so that what will come up will be the more meaningful things that we've been, not our daily life, moment by moment incidents, but something that's got a little more potential in it, so we can actually assess things. All the time, the citta is bounded by contact, which means impressions, by attention, by the boundary of attention. Attention is just the span of awareness at any particular moment, whether it's narrow, you know, sensation in your finger, if you've got a thorn in your finger, that can be, your attention can be completely that, can't it? Every other part of your body disappears apart from this little thorn in your finger. That's attention. Or it could be very wide. You know, if you're looking after a group of 30 children, you have to have a pretty wide attention. Make sure you don't focus on, you know, the buttons on somebody's dress. You get the whole, what's the whole group doing? So you have a wide attention. So that very much acts as a determinant of what you're going to be aware of. Also, the other factor is intention. It's what's the aim? You know, what's the intention? So, if I'm looking for, going to the station, looking for a time of the next train, I'm not going to be bothered about what's on sale in the coffee bar or, you know, so all those things will be filtered out. I'm aiming for where's the notice board, where's the timetable. You know? So, in other words, I might not even notice those other things. You know, might not notice the people, or very, very limited attention to that. So your intention affects what you attend to. Whatever you attend to, you get some contact impression. Something is registered. So that very much defines what your awareness is going to be experiencing at any particular time. Now, in contact impressions, you have to bear in mind there are two levels of this. One is just the immediate impact, something coming to a sense door, something is heard, something is felt, something is touched, something is smelled, or whatever. And then, but the most important thing is the contact impression that your mind makes of that. Like, oh, that was really nice. Oh, that was terrible. Or, you know, that reminded me of this. Every time I get the smell of coffee, I get this feeling of happiness and pleasure, and this will make me feel wonderful. You know, wow. It's just a smell. You know? So you get these very low, some of these contact impressions get loaded with a huge amount of mental impression. Yeah? And a lot of our lives are really about, you know, human lives are about these mental impressions. This is what's called friendly. This particular movement of the lips is called a smile. It means you're welcome. You know, you don't say it's just somebody flexing their lips. You know, but it can, of course, cross cultures, you can get very confused messages, like what seemed to be polite or respectful in Japan can be very odd in Birmingham. You know, different mannerisms. So we have, but those the meanings of those things can be very powerful for us. So it's the interpretations that remain as the most strongest form of impression. In fact, this is purely, the mind purely feeds upon its own impressions. It makes an impression out of a sight or a sound. That's what stays there. Obviously, it's not the sight or sound that stays there, it's the mental impression of that. What a nice guy he was. What a fun day we had yesterday. What a wonderful meal that was. You know? That's what stays. Yeah? So we're actually, in terms of our mental awareness, we are living in a realm of mentally, well, I don't mean thought created, I mean psychologically, emotionally, perceptually created reality. Yeah? Not that it's completely baseless, but it is an inference of comfort, of happiness, of fear, of distress. You know. So we're actually living in that inferential world. Now, that's of course makes us makes life can be, means we can learn and communicate a lot. Like I'm making these little noises now through my pharynx, and hopefully they're translating into something meaningful in your mind, which is great, isn't it? Sometimes it's not. What's he rabbiting on about? The tone of voice I used, if it was kind of strident and quick, you might get a different impression. If it was slow and measured, these are just obvious examples of it. Yet that becomes that impression becomes the dominant sign or meaning of what happened, and that's what stays with you. That's what stays with you. So I had a nice day yesterday. You know, 10 years later, I had a nice day. What happened? I can't remember exactly, but it was nice. What did he say? I've forgotten. It seemed good. You know. And if you, if yesterday, an hour or so after the retreat finished, you've taken 10 people, say, what actually happened today? What did he talk about? You've probably got 5, 7, 10, maybe 15 different responses of what was said. But they were all the bit that meant something for me, you know, the meaning. That's what we live in. Now, why this is relevant, because this is happening all the time, and that's what's stored up. And this signalling, this creating of perceptions, is what human beings do. We create signals. You know, we wear signalling. You know, colours. Shape. We voice signalling. We signal through our faces. It's highly signalling kind of. And we signal, and particularly in cities, signalling is saturated. Every wall's got writing on it, or posters, pictures that delight, pictures that represent comfort, pictures that represent ease, pictures that represent fear, pictures that represent, you know, you name it, you see them all. And it's continual signalling of comfort, ease, fear, joy, happiness. So this is, you know, so actually getting this perceptual overwhelm. So much stuff is coming in, and every one of them is supposed to create some kind of reaction. Like, get this, buy this, beware of that, watch out for this, do this, hurry up with that. You know. So you get this continual resonance. So what happens is you get this kind of overwhelm of stuff coming in, so that the net result of the day really is one of overwhelm. Yeah. And the next day will be a day of running hard to keep up. Of rushing on to keep up. So many things to do. So many things to get on with. Because we're living in this state of sustainable, just about, overwhelm. Hope that's not too grim a picture. It's not necessarily, you know, sometimes it is really not sustainable. Because the signalling can be, you know, so that's just contact impressions. Your energy is running away, trying to handle all this stuff that's going on that's getting you going. Yeah. So because of this, it starts leaving your body. You're not aware of your body. Leaving the groundedness, going into the virtual realities of shoulds and ifs, would be and could be, and how to save money and how to get one of those, all this stuff cooking up. So you know, your awareness can only handle so much at any time. It handles what are the dominant impressions, which will be coming in from outside. So it says, well, I can't handle all of it, we'll forget the body, we'll go to this. So we start to lose our bodies, we start to lose our the depth of our mind, like the patience or the joyfulness or the easefulness, they become sidelined by the imperatives. So your attention is captured, your contact impressions are overloaded, and the intentionality or your aiming or your doingness is about getting on to the next thing, hurry up, getting on to the next thing, making sure you have one of those, making sure this doesn't happen, making sure you keep away from that, you know. So your intentionality is just in this kind of mode of being very activated, yeah, without really a deliberate sense of what do I really want, what's really important right now? I mean, to, you know, go really deeply inward. Where's conscience and concern? Where's compassion? Where's joyfulness? Where's, you know, really life-sustaining things? Because the contact impressions coming in from around you are sidelining all that stuff. So, you know, you get the you know, the sum total experience can be of overwhelm, and then maybe kind of closing down in order to not be overwhelmed. We sort of shut things off, close down. It's kind of slightly defended or constricted state, and also an intensity around what I call law and order, slightly comically. That is routines, systems, got to do this, got to be one of those, got to make this, got to make that. Looking for we operate very much in terms of weekdays, weekends, days off, hours, minutes, seconds, things of this nature. These, none of this is any good for meditation, really. You know, because I'll be, you know, I've been meditating for 5 years. When's it going to happen? When's it going to? I've meditated 10 years. When's it going to happen? I've been meditating for 30 years. When's it going to happen? Well, the point is that as long as that particular mental boundary, mental state is preserved, it's never going to happen. Because we're maintaining a kind of a mental or a psychological mode which is purely samsaric, purely disconnected. So, you know, it's never actually coming into the present and deepening. So when you say, bring up a word like meditation, what perceptions arise? Oh, I don't do enough. You know, okay, how many of you have been meditating here? Oh, I don't do enough. that's that kind of trigger happens, doesn't it? Or it's something really difficult, or I don't get enough time, I know I should. Regret comes in, guilt comes in, frustration, I've really got to meditate. And then meditation, oh, that's tough, being tough, pain in your knees, pain in your back, sitting there, hour in, hour out, long, tough process. Oof. I'll get round to that. But then when I come home from work, oh, switch on the telly and veg out. Because I don't want to have another thing that I've got to do, all sorts of things I've got to realise and attainments I've got to make, and really, you know, strap my mind down and get it to behave like, oh, enough. Tired out. But tomorrow I'll meditate. Yeah, because it's good for me. That's it. Okay, I've made that resolution up, and we'll switch on the telly. Or whatever. A sense of... what I'm sort of doing today maybe is just trying to help us all find ways over the threshold, just to turn the tide around. And if we can find ways of turning the tide around in a daily life, you know, with this, in this kind of environment, and once you actually turn the tide, then, you know, you can go, you have a way to go deeper. And maybe this also means that as you stand at that threshold of what we feel meditation is, what we feel ordinary life is, you can start to perhaps, you know, look at ordinary life and think, well, how much is that really important for me? Well, not so much. You know, and start to, you know, trim down a few things. Or where do I really get panicky and really lose it? Let's look at that. That feeling of panic. That feeling of can't make it. just as a signalling that's happening in the mind right now. Yeah. And not intent, not aiming to get rid of it, but just to feel the signalling and stop and feel what's happening in your chest, in your throat, in your belly, breathing in, breathing out, softening, widening. Yeah. So looking not at so much at particular events outside, but at the signalling, the triggering in your own mind. And the way that we tend to find ourselves structuring our lives around our hot spots and neglecting other places. So we structure our lives around problems, you know, the things that really get me. Rather than the, that was no problem. Walking up the stairs was no problem. Putting my socks on was no problem. Cleaning my teeth was no problem. Be fully aware of those things. It's much more, so you're not, you know, then the way you see, it's not like you're meditating in some sort of bubble, but actually using the skills of awareness, the skills of attention, the reminders to start dismantling some of the construction, the mental vista, the mental landscape that we can find ourselves living in, where all that comes to the surface is the imperatives that have been programmed in from the environment. Yeah. You say, well, I can't meditate, but I can walk upstairs feeling the sensations in my feet as I walk upstairs. I haven't got time to meditate, but I can turn the door handle, feel the feeling of the door handle in my hand, and open the door and listen to the creak. I still don't have time to meditate, but there's a chair there and I can feel myself sitting down in the chair and bring to mind, just to help that, imagine you've just walked 50 miles and you're about to sit, you're going to sit down. You sit. Oh, sitting is wonderful. To sit down after a 50 mile walk. Hey, just take that in. What it's like to sit after a 50 mile walk. What it's like to come into a house when you've been out in the belting rain, snow. Oh, you know, so grateful to be in this house. I don't care what the wallpaper's like. Oh, sit in a house out of the rain and cold, 50 miles of it. Oh, and then you realise you've just done some meditation. Well, you've done something skillful with your awareness. You took the time. And it wasn't like, you know, something that had to be hived out away from your activities. Just actually selecting, being a bit more selective about right now what activities you want to prioritise. And prioritising the ones that are no real issue. The ones that give you a sense of relief, the ones that give you some sense of gratitude or contentment, rather than the ones that are desperate and urgent and imperative and you've got to and so forth. Just that, just shifting that. Yeah? That is skillful. Because you're actually, simple things like that, you're starting to change your contact impressions instead of being with the, I'm always like this, I never like that, monologue. Contact impressions, just this feeling of the body coming into rest, or sitting. And your intention is to dwell in that which is, you know, not causing you suffering. And your attention, giving yourself encouragement to stay with that a little bit longer, like 3 minutes longer. 20 seconds longer. And if we start to do that, it's like you get a little bit of result, and that means, well, I could do this for another minute. This is really nice. You know? So like when I do exercise, I know I ought to do exercise, and as soon as I know I ought to do exercise, I know I'm not going to do it, because I'm fed up with other things I ought to do. I've got enough of them. So if I get an ought to exercise experience, I think, oh, I'm not going to, I refuse to have another ought to. But then I think, well, I can stand up. Yes, I can stand up. Yeah. And I can just sort of bend over once. Yeah, I can do that. Oh, that feels better. And I sort of trick myself into doing exercise. So I hate exercise. So I hate routines. I'm routine up to my eyeballs. So I have to kind of, you know, come out of that way of looking at it. And then you start to get the benefit, and then you want to do a little bit more. And you realise, that thing I ought to do, I don't have to do that. I've heard that one for 25 years, and I've never got to the end of my work. So let's stop it now. Not the work, but stop the triggering, the run. Stop getting hypnotized by the serpent a little bit more. Because there's a very real energy. Now, I was saying, yes, the energy and awareness go together. Okay, so, your awareness is supported by a particular energy called the life energy. You know, we are conscious beings, we're not dead, we're alive. So this our energy, you know, it's not voluntary, it is involuntary. The life energy supports consciousness, supports us being aware, supported by that. Because it's there all the time, we don't know we've got it any more than a fish knows what water's about. We're swimming in it all the time. We have no experience of having nothing. But we can experience it's suddenly getting very dense and turgid in here, very jangly, or suddenly it becomes very soft and smooth. But you know, you get into that try to refer to that sense, and you'll feel energy basically as almost like a sense of being under pressure or constricted or maybe cold or numb or hard. And it's not anything that's physical. You realise that sense of pressure is not actually, nothing's actually physically squeezing me, but I still feel pressure. That's your energy is being pressurised. It's being pressurised by your mind, not by your thinking mind, but by this whole awareness thing which is under pressure. So you feel this sense of pressure, or you feel a sense of relief. Maybe your body does relax, but first of all, what relaxes is your energy softens and widens. And this is not an energy of doing, it's an energy of being. It's the energy of awareness. As we begin to sense that, or check in with that, I think from my experience, my teaching, you know, as such as it is, very much it deals with this. And when we, you know, I see breathing in and breathing out basically as tracking the energy that goes along with the respiration process. It's not entirely separate from it. The respiration, the feeling of air moving in and out of your body, is a physical sign. As you go into that, as you widen and soften with that, you can sense a kind of a flow of energy with that. Warm, you can flush up into your face, goes places where your physical breath doesn't go. And that's exactly the way the Buddha taught it. He said, you know, breathing in and breathing out, spreading it through your whole body. Now, I'm never going to blow air down my fingers, as far as I can figure out, but I can feel the sense of deeply breathing out and a sense of something, an energy starts to shift that can be felt through, let's say, the whole body, but through certain areas like the palms of the hands, for example, soles of the feet, temples, the forehead, the eyes. There's a real feeling of breathing out and breathing in. And you notice these areas that I've just mentioned are often the areas that we either ignore, soles of the feet. What's that going to do with anything? You've got leather boots on, you know, the feet are down there doing their business and I'm up here in my head working on life, you know. So soles of the feet you don't get. Hands are often holding things anyway, or slightly clenched up. Yeah. Yeah. Eyes, gesticulating, focusing, tight. And you notice your forehead, when you get into a lot of concentration, you know, worldly concentration starts to tighten up under pressure. So all these areas constrict. So, you know, a very tangible practice is just to go to these areas in your body and imagining them opening. Like imagining you've got a band around your forehead and you're gently undoing it and feeling the relief of that. Letting your eyes be really loose and soft, just like there are a couple of soft little balls floating in tanks of oil. Yeah. The eyeballs. Yeah. Opening your palms, opening your feet, opening your hands, opening your head. Being aware of the top of your head, the back of your head. These kinds of things. And if you begin to get more in touch with those areas, these areas that shut down or tighten up under pressure. And the pressure is somatically caused. It's caused by, not really by external things, but by the body, mind's awareness, senses pressure, senses imperative, senses danger, senses that, and it retracts energy. So in a way, you know, the signalling, the one who's doing the signalling is in you. It's not really the world, it's in you. And notice this is kind of not easy, but just to remind you, can begin to discharge, operate that signalling, and it's very important to do so. A friend of mine is telling the story of he was Hungarian, and his grandfather tells the story of they were going to a dance. His grandfather and a couple of his friends went to a dance, and it was in a big barn in Hungary. You've got lots of flat land, so they have huge barns for all the grain, and they had this empty barn. They go to this barn and everybody's dancing around and stuff. And then the fire catches fire. This wooden barn catches fire. So there's a fire. So everybody panic, rush to the door. There's a jam of people trying to get through the door. And so this man, he looks around, wow, door jammed. He just pauses. Realizes, this barn's made out of wood. An old barn, just push a hole through the wall. So he and his friends just smash a hole through the wall, they get out. Everybody else burnt dead. You know, they're trampled, burnt. You know. So, you know, just dismantling that trigger could save your life. Time I was going in a kayak, sea kayaking. Yeah, sea kayaking. And the instructor said, okay, you've got cameras. If you drop your camera, don't reach over to pick it up because you'll drown in the water. Just let it go. You know, if you dropped your camera. Sometimes actually, you know, the instinct to hold the thing is so compulsive. You know, this one camera which cost me 180 quid or whatever. You know, you end up losing your life because, you know, the instinct, the compulsion, yeah, the signal is that's my wonderful thing that belongs to me. It's my source of joy. I don't want to lose that. So, you know, that signal comes in stronger than you're about to lose your life. Yeah. So that's why you've got to actually look at some of these little reflex jerks. And some of them are deeply small, but just sad. You know, the fluster of inadequacy and I can't do. And actually, well, you can't do it because this can't be done. Nothing wrong with you. So many things. This, you know, there's all sorts of stories around those signals that take us all day to talk about. We could all share them, I'm sure. But this isn't the time. Just to recognize these contact impressions, the energy that suddenly gets aroused around them, not to be ashamed of that, guilty about that, but to acknowledge it, to say, well, just wait, and even that, the tightening up, the tingling, the I can't do, and just breathing, feeling how your body feels with that, try to widen your sense of your body to include of your hands, your head, your eyes, perhaps your feet, just widen, and then feel one out-breath, let it go as far as it can, let it go as long as it can. Then you're actually shifting the energy from that highly activated on-edge state to something that's more spacious and is much more capable of managing our lives than this pressurized being. Yeah.